Hello, Ngasho. I'm Tamarack, and this is The Diamond Path, a weekly talk on life seen through a Buddhist perspective. Today we're going to talk about science and non-self. Science, pretty self-explanatory. We're a very scientifically minded bunch of people here in the West. Non-self, specifically Buddhist, specifically Eastern. Fairly new idea to the West, but a very integral part of Buddhism, and we'll get to that. But we're going to start out with science, something that we're all a lot more familiar with. So we're looking at science, and we're considering non-self. So let's look at science and see what that has to say about just how much self we actually own. If we look at ourselves in the purest form, which is to say subatomic particles and atoms and all that, self really gets pretty fuzzy. When you get down to a level of atoms and subatomic particles like electrons, protons, and neutrons, and their constituents of quarks and their hypothetical constituents of strings, we're looking at little bits of matter, and we'll get to that in a minute, that are incredibly far apart. There's more space in us than there are in some solar systems. In fact, I've heard this said a number of times, that the relative distance, considering the size of the particle from the nucleus of the atom to the outermost electron, is roughly equal to the diameter of our solar system. So that speaks of a lot of empty space inside these solid things that we think are so much reality, these things we call ourselves. And just, it's a fun bit of statistic, I'll go into this, this whole string theory concept. The quarks used to be the basic building blocks of the subatomic particles like protons and neutrons. And the string theory states that these are in turn, these quarks are in turn made of simple structures like little rubber bands called strings. How big is a string? Well, if an atom were blown up to the size of a solar system, a string would be roughly equal to the size of a tree. So that, if it exists, and all the current theories seem to indicate that it does, strings are not only the tiniest things that can be probably picked up in the phenomenal world, but they're so far apart that we're just a vast amount of emptiness. All right, so there we are physically. Physics speak. We are really nothing but a lot of empty space, and these particles that I mentioned earlier and kind of put a verbal quotes around turn out in themselves not even to be particles. Well before you get to the tiny thing of strings, electrons, neutrons, and protons can all be proved to be not only a particle, but somehow a wave. How's that possible? How can you have one thing that is a particle and yet is also a wave? Well, there's been many classic experiments in science to prove that that is the case. And it speaks of Einstein's theory of what happens at this level, is that matter and energy are equal. Anything that we think is solid is really just a matter of an electromagnetic relationship with other things around us. The atoms in our body react to the atoms that come into us through ingestion, through breathing. So we have this constant flow of atoms, of various elements, and with the rest of the universe, trillions upon trillions of reactions in the subatomic realm. All right, now let's go up a level. Let's look at the body in terms of cells. How many cells are there in the human body? It's a remarkable number, 50 trillion or more. There's like 5 trillion or more in the brain alone. These cells, for the most part, are all self-reliant. With very rare exceptions, you can take these cells out of the body, put them in a petri dish, and they will continue to live. So with the cells and ourselves, we look at this vast, vast population of basically self-reliant, interdependent but self-reliant objects called cells. And how stable is this system? Well, within a couple weeks, the entire lining of your stomach has sloughed off its old cells and gotten a brand new layer. And within a year, virtually every cell in your body has changed. So you're not the same person. I'm not the same person we were a year ago. So in a very real sense, each of us is not this solid whole entity, but rather an entire population of individuals working in concert to allow this greater consciousness, this greater being, ourselves, to operate. We are the Earth in a very real sense. So now we look at ourselves, this vast emptiness proven by subatomic theory, and this vast population of cells that are constantly exchanging themselves with the universe. In fact, it's often been said that some of the oxygen molecules that you're breathing in now were very probably breathed by Gandhi, Christ, Buddha, Julius Caesar, ape men. It's this constant flow. So if we look at ourselves as this individual and we think of ourselves as this thing that exists independent of all other things, it becomes quickly clear that we are just part of this massive river of material, of energy, and of thought, and of emotions. That's just in constant, constant flux. So when we think of non-self, and we think of the self, we have to kind of think besides the cells, besides the atoms, what are we made of? What causes us to think that we are a self? Well, first and foremost, we have a mind capable of reflecting on the self. So we think, wow, that's some proof right there. If I can observe myself and see myself, then I must exist. There must be something there. Well, of course, any concept of non-self speaks of the absolute relationship of people to each other and people to all phenomena. In a relative sense, of course, we're very much a self. How could we possibly navigate through life if we weren't a self? We have to make decisions. We bump into things. We make emotional choices. So we are a self. But we must understand this non-self concept. Otherwise, we fall into the trap of actually keeping ourselves a little too sacred and a little too holy. So non-self is not just a philosophical way of looking at the being. It's a very real way of looking at each of us. And it also allows us to step out of this mold of me, mine, the self, the needs, the gratifications. The essence of selfishness comes out when we look at ourselves as entirely too much of an individual. We have an infinite capacity to understand, to feel the spirit, and however you want to define that, with all life on Earth, with everything on Earth. Every bug, tree, rock, mountain, they all have an essence that is the same essence as us. If you look at any piece of matter, let's say it's a rock, it has carbon atoms, it's nitrogen, oxygen is locked up in its elemental form, the same stuff that we're made out of. We have a meditation in Buddhism that we do on a fairly regular basis where we compare the body to Earth. We look at the elements of fire and air and water, and we talk about how that might be expressed in Earth, fire as the geologic lava and volcanic action that happens underneath the surface, and the heat that comes boiling out, and the air, the winds that are blowing across it, and the earth, the very real structure of mountains and the earth element, trees, and even ourselves. And then we look at how those very same elements are in us, the fire that we use to digest our food, the air that we breathe, the earth that makes up our bones and our bodies. And this meditation is given to allow one to think about the relationship there and how when we begin to realize our relationship with all else out there, we begin to realize that what we think of ourselves as ourself is really just ourself at this moment. If you've eaten something bad, and I'm always reminded of Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens when he first sees the ghost, he blames it on a bit of beef or a piece of undigested potato. Even hundreds of years ago, it was recognized that a slight upset stomach can absolutely change who you are for a good number of hours. So as we think of ourselves as, this is me, I am this, I have certain parameters, those parameters change minute by minute depending on what you take in from the environment. If you're smelling a lousy smell that just disgusts you, there you go. You're a slightly different person than you were when you smelled that. Then you may taste something absolutely wonderful and your joy starts to rise. This is really cool. Then you have a talk with a good friend and they kind of diss you a bit. They point some flaw out that they perceive right or wrong, and all of a sudden you feel bad. Well, you were no longer the same person you were a few minutes ago. Now you're someone with a little bit of anger, a little bit of resentment. This emotion has pulsed through you and it made you a different person. So this age-old idea that life is like a river, always definable, there it is, it's a river, but always flowing and never the same. So are we. We flow through life. Our flows run into confluences of other flows, people, places, things. We become different people. A good example is your mate. After you've spent a number of years with your mate, could you really define yourself as an individual anymore? Or is there so much of the other person in you that you've changed so subtly and you've become more and more like each other? Or more and more unlike each other, depending on your relationship. And even the way dogs start to look like their owners after a while, they both take the same habits. So we're really just this entity that at any given moment has just ceased to be from what it was the following moment. You've lost millions of cells. You're exchanged with the universe, both atomically and nutrients and air and every other way you can think of physically is in constant flux. Your relationship with people, though if you looked at it on average, you'd certainly say you have friends and you have people not so friendly to you. But in general, you can hate your friend one minute, love them the next. We can feel conflicted about our relationship with a number of people, and then very much part of it the next. Every time we look at another individual or a group of individuals, we wonder how we fit in. And fitting in speaks a lot to non-self. If you want to fit in, take the self. Let us take this self that we call ourselves and keep examining it. Does this self exist for itself and for itself only? Does this self take into consideration the welfare of others? Because those others are very much you. Do you look at the population of, let's say, the town you live in, or the county, or the state, or the country? And do you identify so strongly? Do we identify so strongly with these people that we feel this is who we are? We're Americans. If someone attacks America, we have to fight back. It's a knee-jerk reaction. We always have to examine those. Are we fighting the enemy? Is the enemy just another version of us? Whether it's another country, another town in a football game, another person during a conversation? Do we have to be the one that wins? Is it so important that what we take in and the way that we nurture ourselves, is that so much more important than nurturing all? Because after all, if we're all so connected, every action that we have, every emotion that we display, every thought that we have, every intention that we make affects a vast number of beings. Our friends can remain friends or they can become enemies, all based on a few words. Such a tactful life when we try to live mindfully. So, as we navigate through our life over the next few weeks and next few months, let's take a look at this thing that we call ourself. Yeah, we're proud of it, or we're ashamed of it. We think it has great potential, or we fail miserably. Don't look to yourself entirely. Don't look to one's own efforts flawlessly and unendingly. There's too much out there that's willing to help you. We find that anytime we enlist others in cooperation rather than competition, the greater good is served. And when one acts selfishly, selflessly, with the benefit of others in mind, and with the true benefit of others, not doing it because, wow, I can get this, or I can get that, or they'll think nicely of me if I do this. I mean, they may still pop up when you do those things, and that's what you look at, and you reflect. We look at, well, why did I do that? Did I do that because I truly wanted to help these people, or did I do that because, boy, they're really going to think I'm tops? Well, you know, a little bit of that is all right, especially if we realize it. And the more you understand why you do certain things, the greater the depth of understanding you have for your motives entirely. And then as we do something for someone else, more and more it becomes a selfless act. We do to help others. It just becomes part of our heart. We don't even think about it. And by helping others, we do get the benefit. In Buddhism, we call it merit. Of course, that almost sounds like there's some great scorekeeper out there who said, oh, you've been good. 5 points for that. It's all about your own consciousness, my own consciousness, everybody's own consciousness. If we allow our consciousnesses to act in a selfless manner, with an understanding of non-self, with an understanding of our connection with all other living beings, our consciousness begins to absorb this. The more and more we do it, the more and more it becomes part of who we are. Our actions become pure, our thoughts become pure, our motives become pure, and we benefit. We benefit from a purer mind. When you look into the mind in meditation, we often talk about this. If it's clouded with emotions, ignorance, and bad thoughts, it's like a pond. Did I say mirror? I'm sorry. Looking into a pond. If you look into a pond and the water's the least bit muddied or stirred up because of thoughts and emotions, the picture of who we really are and how we fit in is pretty much the same. Muddy, stirred up. But if we can sit in quiet contemplation and look into our hearts and into our minds to see why we react the way we do and how we operate, that stirred up water, that muddied water starts to settle, and ultimately we're looking through a clear pond and we can see right through it to the core of who we are. So if we understand who we are truly, then we also understand who everyone else is, truly. Wisdom starts at home. If we can completely understand the rest of the world, we'd be very smart people, quite wise. But if you understand yourself completely, you're considered enlightened. Because there's very little bit out there that isn't right here. So, this process of self-examination has fruit, and it's in the greater good of all. I'm Tamarack Garlow. I'm a priest of the Tendai School of Buddhism. We have a weekly show here on WBCR LP 97.7 called The Diamond Path. It airs Sunday mornings at 8:30 and repeated again on Wednesdays. Some of our past talks can be accessed on the web at diamondpath.blogspot.com. And if you have any questions or anything you want to share, or if you want some information on our weekly meditation meetings every Monday, please give me a call, 413-229-3263, or email me at primrosecottage.adelphia.net. This is a co-production of Higashi Sangha and the Housatonic Radio Works.